doesn't love a really good cookie? Everybody has their favorite: oatmeal, shortbread, the simple sugar, the showy rum ball, even fortune cookies. For me, it's the chocolate chip all day long, a true classic, and the well-loved, thoroughly stained recipe I printed from Amy Lidstone's email a couple of decades ago is as wrinkled as the surface of the chocolate crinkle cookie my husband loves for the holidays. Some cookies have delicious hidden surprises, a molten center, a dollop of tangy fruit jam. But, like a disappointing nougat candy, less delicious surprises can lurk inside cookies of another sort, which you are dimly aware you have dozens or hundreds of, and which started out with the best of intentions, leading to a batch of unintended and sometimes unsavory consequences. A document that changed the world. Cookies, small chunks of data placed by web servers on internet browsers to facilitate later interaction. Developed by Lou Montulli. 1994. I'm Joe Janes of the University of Washington Information School. And once again, I'd like to thank my former student, Brooke Scheiber, who researched this episode. We might loosely think of 1994 as the Pleistocene epoch of the networked age, more or less the end of the last ice age when things were really starting to heat up. The Internet Protocol was around since 1981. The first World Wide Web standard was launched by Tim Berners-Lee at CERN, the European Nuclear Research Lab, in 1991, and it's all just starting to come together and pick up steam. The web began as exclusively text-based. The first photograph of a band comprised of female employees at CERN appeared in 1992. The first live stream concert and the first webcam of a coffee pot at the University of Cambridge in 1993. By 1994, Pizza Hut launches the first delivery website, the first White House website is published, and Yahoo's and GeoCities launched, and I feel 100 years old because I remember all of those. And an understandably perplexed Bryant Gumbel and Katie Couric debated the meaning of the now ubiquitous at symbol in an on-screen email address on the Today Show in 1994, leading to Gumbel somewhat plaintively asking, "What is internet anyway?" What indeed? The web was always intended to be very lightweight, meaning that once a user accessed a web page or document, it would be delivered, displayed, and then the connection would be severed, freeing the server for the next request. Quaint though that seems now, in a world of dial-up modems and desktop computers, long before mobile devices and gig-speed broadband bandwidth, that made sense. It also meant that the web was, in technical terms, stateless. Every time you connected with a given server, you were strangers to each other, with neither side having any recollection of previous connections and no notion of an ongoing session. That summer, Lou Montulli is a programmer working for Netscape, the for-profit spin-off of the early Mosaic web browser, and he's been tasked with figuring out a way to facilitate a shopping cart feature. A stateless, start-over-every-time web architecture was not gonna cut it. Others are interested in this problem as well, and one idea in the ether is to assign a unique identifier to every individual web browser to help servers maintain sessions. He rejects this out of hand as a significant privacy and tracking concern, so after noodling for a while, he conjures up the seemingly innocent idea of allowing servers to embed little bits of text or code into a browser, like a username or a session identifier, anything that doesn't occupy too much memory, which only that server would recognize and be able to use to sort of remember the connection. He shops the ideas around to colleagues, and the specification is born, implemented in the first release of the Netscape browser in late 1994. Crucially, he also shares the spec so that others can incorporate it, which they do, and in no small part the early popularity and adoption of the web was due to this feature. Then, inevitably, this simple idea gets, shall we say, repurposed. You visit a website, it places a cookie on your browser. Maybe that remembers your name and email address the next time you want to fill in a form on that site to make it easier. Fine. However, say that page contains an embedded link to an image or text or plugin from another website. Well, that's great. That's how the web works. But it also means those references can now plant their own cookies, known as a third-party cookie, the upshot of which is your browsing activity can now be tracked across sites. Now, enter the emerging online advertising industry, in particular DoubleClick, an early innovator, and ads can now cheerfully follow you wherever you go, getting increasingly customized and now algorithmized, and here we are. This got people annoyed. Bad press followed, along with attempts to restrict this by revising protocols, though without any enforcement or penalties, that went nowhere. Too little, too late. Here we have a prime example of a familiar trope in the early internet sphere. Well-meaning technologists developing useful and helpful tools, relatively naive to potential real-world consequences, commercialization, and misuse. Montulli later said that if he hadn't developed cookies in the way he did, something worse would have likely soon arisen. True, though not terribly reassuring. So, why a cookie? The name seems to have been borrowed from an older term from operating system design. A magic cookie is a little piece of data passed between programs to facilitate intercommunication. Also, a pretty simple no-bake graham cracker chocolate chip coconut recipe. Montulli thought his browser idea sounded similar, and the name stuck. It's now ubiquitous and can be found in network protocols, lawsuits, and learned discussions on internet privacy. And it's quite amusing to imagine how foolish important grown-up adults feel who have to use this ridiculous word over and over and over again in litigation and policy debates. Most browsers allow you to actually see cookies. It's a lot less interesting than you think. Mostly just long strings of characters, hugely valuable in their native habitat, unintelligible to the likes of you and me. Most people know that cookies exist and their basic tracking abilities. Everybody who has spent at least 10 minutes on the web knows that they are now regulated because every time you visit a new site, up pops the box or window or bubble or whatever asking for your preferences. I know, your preferences that the box doesn't pop up. Mine too. This is the result of regulatory action by the European Union in 2018, the General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR for short. It applies to organizations based in EU nations, and also, crucially, those that collect or process personal data of anyone in the EU, which is more or less every organization of any size. These rules cover a variety of privacy-related issues, most notably requiring websites to request your consent to the use of cookies beyond necessary and functional ones, though they don't have to make it easy. Have you ever tried actually drilling down into the privacy settings of your browser, social media platform, app to see what lurks underneath? Good luck, and don't forget to leave your dental records behind. This is not entirely a resistance is futile situation. Beyond endlessly clicking the reject all buttons in those pop-up windows, you can clear cookies on your browsers, there are ad blockers, do not track settings, third-party services, and for the homebrew farmers market types like me, browsers such as DuckDuckGo, Firefox, Tor, and more, specifically designed to forward privacy. And let's be real here. Paywalls and such notwithstanding, the open web is still basically free. So that ad infrastructure helps keep it that way. As my dad used to say, if you're not paying for something, you're paying for it, which we do with our eyeballs. Spare a thought for Lou Montulli, a name now largely buried in deep internet history. It's facile to pass him off as a modern-day Dr. Frankenstein, tinkering together a creation and loosening it upon an unsuspecting world to wreak havoc. I think that does him an injustice. He was in a time and space of great excitement and innovation, and sometimes excessively glossy optimism, as a brave new world was being crafted almost literally out of the air, with unknown but breathtaking possibilities ahead, and he had a job to do, and he did it. He's also responsible for several other pivotal internet innovations, including a very early text browser, and was one of the first inductees into the World Wide Web Hall of Fame. So the next time you click that button, swatting away yet more pesky cookies, cut him a little slack. Cookies gave the web coherence, order, helped to make it work more effectively and efficiently in those first days, and did indeed contribute to its wide appeal and adoption. It also gave the initially amnesiac web a memory, and a persistent one at that. It's nice to be remembered when you can walk into your favorite bakery or bar or coffee shop and order your usual because they know who you are. It's quite another matter when every barista or bartender knows not only your usual, but more or less everything else about you. And you have to be persistent yourself in managing and controlling who and what knows what about you, let alone trying to figure out what is being done with all that information. For many of us, some of our earliest memories of cookies were of fresh batches coming out of the oven, the warm aroma filling the kitchen. All well and good, though as we were likely reminded then, cookies are fine, just don't overdo it.